Well, as we walk up this track, perhaps I could give you a little bit of background to Rievaulx Abbey itself and why it was built there. The land was given to the Cistercian monks who built the abbey by Walter Le Spec, who we've heard about back at the castle. The Cistercians were, in the 1130s, a relatively new movement in England. Their first abbey was built in about 1128 down in Surrey, and this was the second one that was founded. And the Cistercian movement was essentially a sort of reaction to what people saw as the failings of the monastic movement of the time, of the Benedictine movement. They felt that it was too worldly, that perhaps it had lost some of the key aspects of monasticism. People reacted to that in different ways, but the Cistercian reaction was an emphasis on simplicity. They wanted a simplicity of life, they wanted simplicity of service, they wanted labour, they wanted simple buildings, not too decorated buildings, and above all, they wanted to withdraw from, as they put it, the tumult of the world. So whereas you might well find a Benedictine abbey or priory right in the middle of a town, the Cistercians looked for isolated sites, quite often unimproved land that benefactors could give to them, people like Walter Le Spec. Rievaulx was an example of this. It was unimproved land, it was needed quite a lot of work being done to it, and the first group of monks arrived there in, I think, about 1132. First thing to do was to clear the land away and then start to build their abbey here. And ultimately, it became one of the largest monastic houses in the north of England, with over 100 monks and a large number of lay brothers as well. Lay brothers were not exactly monks, but they lived a kind of simplified monastic life. But what they did was they did the manual work for the Cistercian monks, thus enabling them to concentrate on perhaps less worldly matters, and also enable them to be a little bit more independent from the world, because they could then produce their own food, do their own building, and so on and so on. And so what you had at Rievaulx really was a community, partly religious, partly agricultural, partly industrial, and that community has very much left its mark upon the landscape that we're walking through today, and we'll see this as we go up further on the walk. Well, as you walk up the track, you'll go through a gate, and then on your left hand side there's a wooden fence, and through that fence you get a series of views actually of Helmsley Castle. You'll be able to see the Great East Tower, half of which remains, the other half was blown up by the Parliamentarians during the Civil War. Over on the right you can see the converted Tudor mansion, and in front of it the walled Helmsley Garden. Now that was actually built for a later house, Duncan Park. The grassland and parkland that you can see to the right of the castle was part of Duncan Park, and garden was originally built to produce fruit and veg for the inhabitants of Duncan Park. In the late 17th century, the Duncan family, who were politicians and merchants from London, purchased the estate here. And by that time, actually, Helmsley was looking pretty old-fashioned, and so a new house was built within the estate itself. It's had a bit of a mixed fortunes over the years. It's been burnt down more than once, but it still remains there. When the Duncan family purchased the estate, they paid £90,000 for it. And at the time, it was said to be the largest purchase of land by a commoner in the country. Well, they built a house on the site, which we can't see from here, although we can see, obviously, the walled garden and part of the parkland. In that park, actually, really from medieval times, there were a lot of deer. It was a deer park for the castle. And afterwards, the Duncans continued to keep deer there. And there were deer, actually, until the Second World War. But I guess with food rationing, as it was a bit of a tempting target. And all of the deer were killed and eaten at that time, so none remain today. So follow the track up to the top of the hill and you'll come to a kissing gate where you need to turn left. It's marked Cleveland Way, and also there are some yellow arrows from the North York Moors that will help direct you as well. If you walk on for about 10 minutes or so, with fields on your right and woodland and a rather dilapidated dry stone wall on your left, you'll eventually come to a series of stiles and a slope down. And what we need to do now is to descend down into the valley and then go up some steps on the far side. So that'll take a little bit of effort, so I'll keep quiet now and we'll speak again when we've got to the top.